As we begin today, I'd like for us to open to Joshua, chapter number 22. We are finishing up the allotment of the tribal regions and the Levitical cities to all the different tribes and the Levitical groups that took place at Shiloh, which is the new location of the tabernacle. It's centrally located under the leadership of Joshua and Eleazar the high priest. And Joshua is probably administering all of these things at the beginning of the first sabbatical year. I am positive that this is all happening in the 47th year of the Exodus, which is the seventh year that the Israelis were in the Promised Land. And so I know that the first sabbatical cycle should have started in the fall of that particular year, which, by the way, would be 1410 BC by my calculations. And Joshua now needs the people to go out and make the Promised Land theirs by depending upon God. Now, the first order of business is to take care of the tribes from the annexed territories to the east of the Jordan, because they agreed that in exchange for receiving their inheritance early in the region that they'd taken from Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites on that side of the Jordan, they would send a vanguard, a heavily represented military force, across ahead of the other tribes and help them get their territory at least opened up for settlement. And so they've accomplished that, and so it's now time for them to leave. Chapter 22, verse 1. At that time, Joshua summoned the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh and said to them, "You have kept all that Moses, the servant of He Who Is, commanded you, and have obeyed my voice in all that I commanded you. You have not forsaken your brothers these many days down to this day, but have been careful to keep the charge of He Who Is your God. And now He Who Is your God has given rest to your brothers, as He promised them. Therefore, turn and go to your tents in the land where your possession lies, which Moses, the servant of He Who Is, gave you on the other side of the Jordan." So they filled their obligations. It's now time for them to be released from military obligations on this side of the Jordan. Verse 5, "Only be very careful to observe the commandment and the law that Moses, the servant of He Who Is, commanded you, to love He Who Is your God, and to walk in all His ways, and to keep His commandments, and to cling to Him, and to serve Him with all your heart and with all your soul." So he blesses them as they depart and says, the only thing I'm asking you is stay true to the one true God. Verse 6, "So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went to their tents." Joshua did this for all the tribes at this time as well. We can see that in Judges chapter 2, verse 6, where it says, "When Joshua dismissed the people of Israel went each to his inheritance to take possession of the land." So he's kicking off the next stage in Israel's history. They've done the initial sweep through the land and defeated all of the fortified cities and killed off all of the kings of those fortified cities within Canaan. So now each of the tribes individually need to go in and finish occupying their own territory with the help of God. So verse number 7 back in Joshua 22, Now, the one half of the tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given a possession in Bashan. But the other half, Joshua had given a possession beside their brothers in the land west of the Jordan. And when Joshua sent them away to their homes and blessed them, he said to them, "Go back to your tents with much wealth and with very much livestock, with silver, gold, bronze, and iron, with much clothing. Divide the spoil of your enemies with your brothers." So this is the accumulated booty, the accumulated war trophy collections that these tribes from east of the Jordan have been storing up. So they're going to go back to their home territory now and spread that around with the rest of the families that did not send representatives with them because they were back being a home guard. Verse 9, so the people of Reuben and the people of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh returned home, parting from the people of Israel at Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan, to go to the land of Gilead, their own land, of which they had possessed themselves by command of He who is through Moses. So they're going to leave Shiloh, and they're going to follow a path down to the Jordan River. And then they will go across the Jordan River, and they'll split up and go to all of their different tribal areas and tribal cities and start their own lives. But they do something at the border between the Promised Land proper, which is west of the Jordan, and the annexed territories to the east of the Jordan, because the Jordan is a very natural barrier between the two sections of Israel now. And they don't want this to become a barrier of faith in the future. So verse 10, when they came to the region of the Jordan that is in the land of Canaan, that's on the west side, the people of Reuben and the people of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh built there an altar by the Jordan, an altar of imposing size. So they make this massive pile of stones and flatten it out on the top so that it looks like an altar. The people of Israel heard it said. Now, the people of Israel in this context means all of the tribal groups that are in Canaan proper, west of the Jordan. So when they heard it was said, "Behold, the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh have built the altar at the frontier of the land of Canaan in the region about the Jordan on the side that belongs to the people of Israel." And when the people of Israel heard it, the whole assembly of the people of Israel gathered at Shiloh to make war against them. Now you might be going, what in the world is this about? Why are the 9.5 tribes getting ready to declare war on the 2.5 tribes? And the reason is because it's very clear in the law that there's only supposed to be one place, one altar, where sacrifices are offered now. That's at Shiloh. And these guys, in the minds of the 9.5 tribes, these guys have violated that. They're building an altar. And the book of Deuteronomy in particular said, if your friends even, relatives, start misleading you, taking you down a path of rebellion, you must come down hard on them. So these guys are planning on coming down hard on them. But they're making an assumption here that thankfully gets cleared up. Verse 13. Then the people of Israel sent to the people of Reuben and the people of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh in the land of Gilead, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, and with him 10 chiefs, one from each of the tribal families of Israel. So the 9.5 tribes makes 10 chiefs, and then Phinehas represents God and the priesthood and the Levites. And so they go across the Jordan and set up a meeting with the leaders of the 2.5 tribes. Verse 15, they came to the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, the half-tribe of Manasseh, in the land of Gilead. They said to them, thus says the whole congregation of He Who Is, what is this breach of faith that you have committed against the God of Israel in turning away this day from following He Who Is by building yourselves an altar this day in rebellion against He Who Is? Have we not had enough of the sin of Peor, from which even yet we have not cleansed ourselves, and for which there must become a plague upon the congregation of He Who Is, that you too must turn away this day from following He Who Is? Now that's a reference to something that happened a little over 7 years ago now. It was at the tail end of the 40 years of wandering. They were in the plains of Moab, and the local Moabite kids, teenagers and 20-somethings and 30-somethings, invited the Israelis to come and sing and dance and drink and have sex and end up worshiping this god of Peor. And it brought God's judgment on the whole community. So it's being brought up here as an example from the recent past of the actions of part of Israel getting all of Israel in trouble. So if you too rebel against He Who Is today, then tomorrow He will be angry with the whole congregation of Israel. But now, if the land of your possession is unclean, pass over into He Who Is's land, where He Who Is's tabernacle stands, and take for yourselves a possession among us. Only do not rebel against He Who Is, or make us as rebels by building for yourselves an altar other than the altar of He Who Is our God. So these guys are making the assumption that the people on the east side of the Jordan feel that they need to have an altar closer that they can offer sacrifices on. And they want it apparently inside the Promised Land, but just barely. So they built it down in the Jordan Valley on the western shore with easy access from the eastern side by the 2.5 tribes. And so Eleazar and the rest of the leaders go, look, if you feel like it's a bad idea for you to live in the annexed territories because you can't really worship God properly, then forget them. Forget those territories. Just come across the Jordan with us. We will carve out tribal areas for you inside the Promised Land and make it easy for you to come to the tabernacle and worship like you should. Just don't violate God's commandments like you're doing. They've got another example, verse 20. Did not Achan, or Achar, remember, the son of Zerah break faith in the matter of the devoted things, and wrath fell upon all the congregation of Israel, and he did not perish alone for his iniquity. That's the guy that kept a few items from the plunder of Jericho, and he ended up bringing God's judgment down upon the nation in the next fight that they were involved in. So these are examples that are used to say, look, you guys from the 2.5 tribes, don't be getting us all in trouble. Stop it. Verse 21. Then the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh said in answer to the heads of the families of Israel, oh, the mighty one, God, He Who Is, the mighty one, God, He Who Is. And the Hebrew here is just kind of repeated twice, that He Who Is the mighty God, all right? So, He knows. So God knows what we did. Let Israel itself know. If it was in rebellion or in breach of the faith against He Who Is, don't spare us today for building an altar to turn away from following He Who Is. Or if we did so to offer burnt offerings or grain offerings or peace offerings on it, may He Himself take vengeance. No. But we did it for fear that in time to come, your children might say to our children, what have you to do with He Who Is the God of Israel? For he who is has made the Jordan a boundary between us and you, you people of Reuben and the people of Gad. You have no portion in he who is. So your children might make our children cease to worship he who is. So you understand the dilemma for them. The Jordan River is a much more significant boundary than a wadi or a mountain ridgeline or the edges of certain fields. That's the types of boundaries that are on the western side in Canaan proper. The Jordan River, though, is something you either have to wade across or swim across in order to move from one side to the other. So it isn't a significant boundary. So they were afraid that at some distant point in the future, the Western Israelis inside of the Promised Land proper would say to the Eastern Israelis outside of those boundaries, you don't belong to our group. You chose to stay outside of the Promised Land. You forfeited the right to worship the God of the Promised Land. And so the 2.5 tribes came up with a plan. Verse 26, therefore we said, let us now build an altar, not for burnt offerings, nor for sacrifice, but to be a witness between us and you. So it's a memorial stone, tower or building. It looks like an altar, but it's not intended to be used as an altar. It's to be a marker of great prominence. And this will be between our generations after us, that we may that we do perform the service of he who is in his presence with our burnt offerings and sacrifices and peace offerings, so your children will not say to our children in the time to come, you have no portion in he who is. So this was supposed to be an ongoing historical marker, too massive to really be moved easily out of the way, to remind both sides that they are one faith, despite the fact that there's a big river between them. Verse 28, we thought, if this should be said to us or to our descendants in time to come, we should say, behold, the copy of the altar of he who is, which our fathers made, not for burnt offerings nor for sacrifice, but to be a witness between us and you. Far be it from us that we should rebel against he who is and turn away this day from following he who is by building an altar for burnt offering, grain offering, or sacrifice other than the altar of he who is our God that stands before his tabernacle. Now this makes me think, and I'm just going to throw it out there for you to chew on. It makes me think that they didn't just simply build up a great big bunch of stones with a flat top on it, but they took the time and cast a bronze replica of the sacrificial altar that's in front of the tabernacle building at Shiloh and placed that up on the top of this pile of stones. And that's really what got the 9.5 tribes all bent out of joint, because they thought it definitely was going to be used for sacrifice, when the 2.5 tribes are saying, nope, it's just a memorial marker, a reminder that all of us offer the sacrifices on the same altar at the tabernacle. Now, verse 30, when Phinehas, the priest, and the chiefs of the congregation, the heads of the families of Israel who were with him, heard the words that the people of Reuben and the people of Gad and the people of Manasseh spoke, it was good in their eyes. So they accepted the explanation. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, said to the people of Reuben and the people of Gad and the people of Manasseh, today we know that he who is in our midst, because you have not committed this breach of faith against he who is. Now you have delivered the people of Israel from the hand of he who is. And then Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, and the chiefs returned from the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, in the land of Gilead, to the land of Canaan, to the people of Israel, and brought back word to them. And the report was good in the eyes of the people of Israel. And the people of Israel blessed God and spoke no more of making war against them to destroy the land where the people of Reuben and the people of Gad had settled. And the people of Reuben and the people of Gad called the altar witness. Now, some of you are looking at older Bible versions, and it has Ed in there, E-D. And I think there's a little bit of confusion by that, because the actual name of this altar came up earlier, the purpose of it, and that is, it is to be a witness to both sides that they are one religious people. For they said, it is a witness between us that he who is God. So they have the same God, and they are to worship at the same altar, which is located right now at Shiloh. So all of that probably finishes in the fall of 1410 BC. The beginning of the sabbatical year. And so everybody has done the Feast of Tabernacles, and now everybody is back to where they've been living in the earlier part of this year, and they're going to just rest there. They'll eat whatever is grown of its own, because that's the way you're supposed to do in a sabbatical year. So the sabbatical year would have been over in the fall of 1409 BC. And after the Feast of Tabernacle was finished in 1409, they would have kicked off the eighth year inside the Promised Land. And they would have started preparing their fields and planting their grain crops. They would have then wintered over. And in the spring, they would have started harvesting some of the spring crops like flax. And then the grains like barley and the wheat, and that would have all happened in the spring of 1408 BC. That year should have marked when each of the different tribes started pushing into and occupying the territory that had been given to them. But that is not what happens. Instead, they panic when they see the Canaanites back in place. And this is where we now go to the book of Judges again. We're not quite totally done with everything in the book of Joshua, but there's a little bit of overlap between the end of the book of Joshua and the beginning of the book of the Judges. So I want you to see this as the start of a pattern which gets the Israelis in trouble. And it's reported in the book of Judges. Chapter 1, starting at verse number 21. Now, some of this we kind of already saw, but now comes the troubling ones. Verse 21, but the people of Benjamin, remember they have a tribal area just to the north of where Jerusalem is located today. The people of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who lived in Jerusalem. So the Jebusites have lived with the people of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day. So the Benjamites, of their own free will, of a choice that lacked faith, did not get rid of the Jebusites that moved back into the ruins of the city of Jebus, or Jerusalem, which Joshua had destroyed. And those Jebusites rebuild the city. And the Benjamites don't do anything about it. So now there's Canaanites living securely inside Benjamin territory. And over time, the Benjamites will start trading with them. Verse 22. The house of Joseph also went up against Bethel, and he who was with them. and the house of Joseph scouted out Bethel. Now, the name of the city was formerly Luz. The spies saw a man coming out of the city, and they said to him, "Please show us the way into the city, and we will deal kindly with you." Now, they were actually trying to take over from the Canaanites that had reoccupied Bethel after Joshua's campaign. But they make deals with them, even though they're not supposed to. So, verse 25, he showed them the way into the city. They struck the city with the edge of the sword, and they let the man and all his family go. And the man went to the land of the Hittites and built a city and called it Luz, and that is its name to this day. Verse 27, Manasseh did not drive out the inhabitants of Bethshan and its villages, or Tanakh and its villages, or the inhabitants of Dor or its villages, or the inhabitants of Iblim and its villages, or the inhabitants of Megiddo and its villages, for the Canaanites persisted in dwelling in that land. So the Canaanites are moving back in after Joshua had cleared the areas of all these fortified cities and the armies that were associated with them. Those Canaanites are coming back and they're re-embedding themselves in the same spots again, and the Israelis are letting it happen. But they're compromising when they think it suits their purposes. Verse 28, when Israel grew strong, they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but they did not drive them out completely. Ephraim did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gezer, so the Canaanites lived in Gezer among them. Zebulun did not drive out the inhabitants of Kitron or the inhabitants of Nahalol, so the Canaanites lived among them but became subject to forced labor. So you can see, as our time is running out today, there's a pattern being established here. The Canaanites have started moving back in, reoccupying the land, and the Israelis are letting them do it, letting them get away with it, and sometimes just making deals with them and letting them stay in the midst of what's supposed to be the promised land. And that's where the trouble of the book of Judges starts.